Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello everyone, Charles Watts here. Welcome back to Inside Arsenal, where as you can see, I'm joined again by James Benge of CBS, which means it's time for Inside Arsenal Extra Time. How you doing, mate? All good?
I am great. How are you? It's been a financy week, hasn't it? We're going to talk some numbers, which I know you can
No, you're going to talk some numbers. I'm going to listen and nod like I understand what you're talking about. But really, it's going completely over my head and I'm probably counting sheep in my head or something like that. But
what's the worst that could happen?
Yes. So we will talk a little bit of numbers, football.
Chelsea. There's only one number that matters, mate.
What's that? That's
5 or 6 or however many Arsenal score every time they go away from home.
Nice, this football. Isn't it easy?
Easy.
Stadiums empty everywhere we go. It's certainly a song being sung over and over again by Arsenal fans when they're watching their team at the moment. And we saw it again on Monday night. And just another... It was weird. I didn't go, obviously. I watched it at my dad's house and I drove like a half an hour journey from where I live to where my dad lives. I drove and I was listening to Talk Sport and their pre-match chat in the build-up to kickoff. And it was like Adrian Durham. I know. I can't remember who else was on. It was Sam Matface and someone else. And it was all like, how many goals are Arsenal going to get? You know, you were talking about. How many goals is it going to be? And they were saying the record, you know, if Arsenal score 5, it's the first time an away team scored 5 in 3 consecutive top flight games. It'll be the first time a home team has conceded 5 in 3 consecutive top flight games. And I was listening to it and I was just thinking, oh, this has got 1-0 Sheffield United written all over it. Everyone's talking about this. Like it's going to be another steamroller in, like it's going to be 5-0 at half time. And of course, that's not going to happen. And then it happened. It's just everything that everyone predicted before the game just panned out exactly like everyone was predicting before the game. It was crazy to watch, wasn't it? It was mad to watch that first half. And
I was almost similar to you, but slightly more extreme in that I'll be honest, I was more of the Adrian Durham school. And I was like, I'm not going to bother watching this. I'll record it. And if it feels like it's important to watch, I will. But I think Arsenal are going to blitz them and I don't think I'm going to learn much from it. So I did watch it back and was like, yeah, I was right. Not learning much from this at all. Arsenal are too good. And I think when you watch it clear-eyed after the fact, you kind of think, this is what the best teams in Europe, the best teams in the world do to a team that's heading for the championship. And I know everyone wants to say, oh, you know, who have they beaten other than Liverpool and West Ham and Newcastle? But there's a way to beat those teams. And that way is to pulverize them in 15 minutes, if not less. Like, this is the mark of what I now think is the best team in England and probably by extension, the best team in Europe. Like that might not be reflected in trophies at the end of the season because that stuff's all a bit weird, but Arsenal are the best team in Europe right now, is my view. Possibly Inter.
You know, we said that last week, and there was a lot of comments on the last week's show saying that that's just not true, and that we weren't right, and that Arsenal, and that we were getting carried away, and Arsenal weren't best team in Europe. And people were saying they lost to Porto, they lost to Liverpool in the FA Cup, and
but
yeah, I mean,
best
we're not
teams in Europe lose games still.
Yeah.
City have been the best team in Europe for ever since Pep took over, or at least since his second season. But they still lost, didn't win the Champions League, but like they were better than the Real Madrid teams that won it sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I agree. I double down on. I'm at the moment. I'm not saying they're right now. You know, they are the undisputed best team in Europe. I'm saying right now, I think they are the most informed league team in Europe, if not the world. And I'm loving what they're doing. It's reminding me of the Invincibles days of just turning up to games and then being over within 10 minutes, 15 minutes. You know, 2-0, 3-0. Job done, and it's very nice. It's not going to continue, obviously, and we very soon, potentially on Saturday, who knows, there's going to be a game where it just, you know, Arsenal aren't leading at half time, they don't fly out the blocks and blow teams away, and they're going to have to grind it out, and that's going to happen. That's football, it's inevitable. But right now I'm just really enjoying what we're seeing from the team, and yeah, it was a lot of fun. I mean, it's an interesting one, isn't it, because after pretty much every game at the moment and every result, it's, were Arsenal that good or were the other team that bad? But I think when you're consistently seeing the same result week after week, game after game, then the conversation about how bad the other team was, I think, becomes almost a bit mute, because it's just what Arsenal are making that team look so bad by what they're doing, and they're doing it on a consistent basis. It doesn't matter who they're coming up against, whether it be, like you said, they did it to Liverpool. It was only 3-1, but they did it to Liverpool in that game. And obviously, they did it to West Ham away from home. They did it to Newcastle, who are a decent team. So it can't just be that the other team are that bad. It has to be, at some point, the conversation has to turn to, well, the team doing it to all these other sides are just very, very good. And right now, I don't think there's an argument that Arsenal are just very, very good.
Exactly. I mean, and people end up having to have all these incredibly bad faith arguments just to make a point. My favourite is the Liverpool fan account I saw that was like, oh, you think Arsenal's winning run is good? This is what a wheel winning run looks like. Well done. Like, that's fine. But I mean, actually, I think one of the things for Arsenal supporters, the only thing I can say is someone that's chronicled an awful lot of misery in his time covering this club, just like, don't worry too much at the moment. Like, but, you know, enjoy it, live it, try and live in the moment. And that moment might get snatched away at the Etihad at the end of the month, because, you know, all the things we've said could be true and City might still win because they're the one of the other teams that might be the best in Europe. So I think while it's happening, it should just be, you don't need to worry about, are we just playing rubbish opposition? Like, I've seen a lot of Arsenal teams play rubbish opposition and make them look better and make Arsenal look worse. Just, I mean, this is a really special moment right now, and the Emirates is going to be rocking again on Saturday. I can't wait to see Ivan Toney. The battle between Ivan Toney and the Clock End and the North Bank is going to be something special. So, yeah, try not to worry too much and just enjoy these, because as you and I know, it doesn't come along that often, even for Arsenal.
No, it doesn't. I saw a really good tweet the other day. I don't know who it was from. It just popped up my timeline, and someone saying, I don't care if we don't win or not. I don't care. It's like, even if we don't go on and win this league, this is the most fun I've had watching Arsenal in a long, long time. You know, the last couple of years is the most fun I've had watching Arsenal in a long, long time. And I love this team. And I think that's a really good way to look at it. Obviously, everyone's trophies at the end of the day, but you know, it wasn't that long ago that it was really, really miserable following Arsenal, when you were kind of looking at everyone else competing for the top honours and thinking, that's a million miles away. But now, you know, Arsenal are very much in that mix. And the good thing is they look like they're going to stay in that mix. Whatever happens this season, you know, you would pretty confidently predict they're going to be in the mix again next season now, and that's not going to change. And you know, that's just what we all wanted not long ago now, but obviously it'll be nice to finish it off with trophies. You talked about Brentford there, which is obviously a massive game. They're all massive games, every single game is huge, but the significance of Arsenal going first this weekend and significance of what happens 24 hours later, it's very hard to kind of underestimate that. Now, Arsenal have been playing catch up the last couple of weekends. This is their time to sort of lay down the early marker and then hopefully be able to sit back, put the feet up, whack the TV on. Mikel Arteta's just said that he's going to watch it with his kids on Sunday.
I loved how everyone was trying to get him to sort of say what result. He was so in his, you know, when he gets sort of tight, and it's like, I'm not going to answer any question. People saying, what result do you want? He was like, I'm not, I don't care about the results. Of course you do, Mikel. Like, of course you want a draw, or of course maybe you want probably a draw. But he's so sort of cautious about making headlines sometimes that he was just like, yeah, just want to enjoy a good game, guys. Just want it to be a great football match. Like, no, you want a draw. You want 6 injuries and 8 red cards for both teams. Like, don't lie to us, Mikel.
Yeah, Rodri red card would be nice, I have to say. Rodri red card, and then, Haaland getting sent off for arguing his case, something like that, in the last couple of minutes, and it's still finishing 1-1. That would be the dream scenario in that one. So, I mean, in terms of playing first, do you think that's going to have any sort of impact on Arsenal this weekend? Do you sort of look at that going, you know, the front runners this weekend, thinking that might change things a little bit?
I do. I think it more has, the impact is really contingent on winning. But I think for too long, it's almost felt like Arsenal have just been on the periphery of this conversation. And I think part of what it will do is Arsenal will hope it will make City and Liverpool go at it if they win. That both those teams feel like, well, you know, we don't want to find ourselves third with an international break right around the corner. And I know these margins are razor tight, and, you know, any team could in 1 week go from first to third. But I think just putting a bit of pressure on both of your opponents to say, you've got to win, because Arsenal right now are playing like a team that could do what are they on now? 7? Like
7, yeah.
7 straight wins could, you know, the way they're playing, it could be a really long stretch, or it could be a stretch of 8, 9, 10 wins and a draw. And so I think, yeah, this is really about firing. I don't think it will matter too much to the actual players, but I think you can get in the minds of your rivals. And that always, I remember feeling that after City beat Everton. You remember where it was just like, these players now know it's gone. And I know that was later in the season, so I don't think it'll be quite as impactful, but I think you can start playing on some fears about Arsenal that City and Liverpool would be wise to have.
Yeah, I agree. I think if they win, it's the first time they've gone top since Christmas, isn't it? Since that draw at Liverpool, actually, when it was sort of confirmed them being top at Christmas. And I think it can have a big impact. Arsenal are certainly seen or have been seen as the kind of outsiders in this title race by everyone. It's all because it's Liverpool, Man City, that rivalry that basically has ruled the Premier League for the last, whatever, 6, 7 seasons. Everyone's kind of looking at Arsenal as the kind of also-rans in this title race, I think. But if they win at the weekend, then they're definitely going to be at least second going into the international break, potentially top first. And I think that will just, I think it just moves them kind of front and centre into this title race, probably for the first time, really, since we've started to get the impression that it might well be a 3-horse race. And I think that could be important. And it looks to me, I just get the feeling looking at this team that they're beginning to revel in the sort of battle that they are in. They certainly seem to be up for it. And, you know, being top, even if it is just for a day, you know, I think that will give them a real, real boost, because it wasn't so long ago. You know, you go back to the end of that Fulham game, being 5 points adrift and looking like they're out on their feet, that you kind of thought that it was gone. And now here you are with a chance to go top going into the final international break of the season. I think it's going to really energise a team that is looking really, really energised as it is. I mean, Mikel Arteta has literally just finished his press conference at the time of recording this, and good team news, you know, real boost for Arsenal. It looks like both Saka and Martinelli are going to be fit for this game. You know, I thought he might be a little bit more cautious on this update when it comes to these two, certainly on Martinelli, because I think everyone expected Saka would probably be fit. It was only illness, obviously, that forced him off. But, you know, he's pretty much saying there that, you know, we are pretty positive that they're both going to be available for the game. I mean, that's a major boost to have those two wingers who are both playing so well at the moment, have been so influential in this run that Arsenal have been on, to have them fit for the game. Tomiyasu is doing stuff on the pitch. There's a chance that him and Zinchenko could potentially be available, but I'm still kind of looking at post-international break for those two. You know, anything other than that's going to be a bonus. But having these two fit and available, given the form that they're in, it's a huge boost for Arsenal, isn't it? Especially with Porto on Tuesday night as well.
Oh, massive. And I think Martinelli in particular, when he was sort of hobbling out down the tunnel, I priced in not seeing him until after the international break. So that is really, really good news. I mean, I wouldn't have been worried to be without one of them, given the way that the rest of this squad is playing at the moment. But both is when you start going like, oh, just like, and I mean, right now, when we talk about sort of best in the world and all that, Saka is one of the best players in the Premier League in 2024, if not the best. And having him, he's just reached this other level now where him in your side makes you feel like there's a guarantee. You've got one goal or one assist today, and it'll be coming from Bakayo. So him and Martinelli against the Brentford team that are going to, you know, I think I've seen quite a lot of them of late. Sergio Reguilón looks really good going forward, but Saka against Reguilón and whoever they have at the back is going to be a real challenge for Brentford, it has to be said.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. He's playing so well. It made me laugh when Mikel said afterwards that he was ill, and that's why he went off. It's like, he'd literally just run Sheffield United ragged for 45 minutes, and then you find out he's been ill and has had to go home sick on one of the days leading up to it as well. So yeah,
it says a lot about Sheffield United.
It does. What were they doing playing Austin Trusty at left back? What was that about? It was so bizarre. Really odd decision from Chris Wilder. Not that it was too much of a bother for Arsenal. It was a boost for Arsenal. But Martinelli as well, I think he's, you know, for a player who I think for the first half of the season, we're all wondering, you know, is he at his best? His goal output wasn't great. His goal contribution wasn't great. He's made a big, big upturn. He's had a big upturn in form recently, hasn't he? Obviously got a goal, slight deflection on it against Sheffield United. But yeah, I think he's in really good form. I like you, I was really worried when I saw him, you know, being carried off the pitch, basically. I was kind of looking at that thinking he's done a metatarsal or something's happened really, really serious. So for him to basically be fit for this game at the weekend, that is not what I was expecting when I saw him going off down the tunnel on Monday night. But he's in fine form as well. And would you play him though? What would you do in this game? I spoke about it on my show this morning. I think it's a really interesting one for Arteta because that Porto game is so huge on Tuesday night. So it's a Saturday evening and then a Tuesday evening.
Yeah.
And Mikel has been, he's been playing this same team basically, hasn't he, for a while now with, you know, Jorginho, Rice, Odegaard as the three. Do you change things up a little bit against Brentford, or do you think that this team that obviously Mikel's really liking at the moment can get the job done in both games with very little changes?
Yeah, I suppose three games in 8 days should be manageable. I mean, I hadn't necessarily thought, obviously, because I thought Martinelli wasn't going to be available without having sort of dug into that, I hadn't really thought about Martinelli, and I was thinking about him more in the context of Jorginho and what you can get out of him. And I think maybe like those are the two I'm interested in. With someone like Jorginho, I think it's play from the start, win the game, get him off so that he's, you know, he's got what he needs for Tuesday. But at Martinelli, perhaps there you can use him as more of an impactor into this game off the bench. Maybe you go Jesus and Havertz. Might be too many minutes for Jesus. So maybe you go Trossard and Havertz. Like,
there are options there now, aren't there? Which is good. There's not long ago there wasn't, but now there are.
Yeah, exactly. You just make that. I mean, I think you effectively let the medical staff guide you, and if they think Martinelli's good to go, yeah. And then I think with those two, you can do what you've done a lot of late: win the game, get them off early, think about Porto. I think that's probably the best way to approach it.
I think pretty much every game at the moment, we're kind of approaching it, going into it, thinking, is this a game where he's going to give Jorginho rest and he could go with a Smith Rowe or someone like that? And he's not doing it. He's continuing to play Jorginho. I mean, it's a question again for this Saturday. You know, do you need to play Jorginho against Brentford? Could you go with, you know, go back to Rice as a holder and then bring in a Smith Rowe who didn't get any minutes at the weekend or on Monday night? Or you could play, you know, Fabio Vieira, who I thought was very bright when he came on for 45 minutes. Thomas Partey's, of course, back, although he looked very, very, very rusty against Sheffield United when he came on, as did Gabriel Jesus at times. So there are options there, but it's going to be interesting to see how he kind of balances it, because it's a massive week. It's a massive week for Arsenal, obviously. It's a huge week for Arteta. I spoke about that again today, this morning, and he's never won a knockout game in Europe. And that Porto game is, if it goes wrong, and I hope, obviously we hope it doesn't, it would be such a missed opportunity, such a huge missed opportunity for Arsenal if it goes wrong against Porto on Tuesday night. They need to win that game. They really, really do. And it's a massive week for Arteta, I think. And how he sort of balances the teams and the starting 11s for both games, I think is going to be really, really interesting.
And it would certainly open up the possibility of just slowing their momentum in the Premier League a little bit. They did so well to put that loss out of their mind, didn't they, against... was it Burnley they played after, or was it West Ham? I can't quite remember.
Wasn't West Ham, was it?
No, it was. It was after the Burnley game, I think. So it was between West Ham and Burnley. I mean, pretty much I can say whichever one, because they've been winning them all 5-6-0 anyway. So they responded very well to the last Porto defeat. And I think that was a strange, weird game where they will have learned a lot. But, you know, it's great to learn those lessons, apply them and then get through, rather than, you know, being a learning experience in the Champions League. And
Newcastle, it wasn't either of the ones you were talking about.
Really? Was it that recently?
It was Newcastle. It was 21st of February, Porto, 24th was Newcastle on the Saturday night.
I mean, my brain, these round of 16 weeks just kill me work-wise, especially when you have like big Premier League games on the Monday night. Yeah, I think fair to say then they did respond very well to the Porto defeat, but yeah. I think it's one that could check your momentum. And I don't particularly see, for a team that's not in the FA Cup, I don't really see the value of sort of having a view of like, well, if we're out, at least we get time to focus on our fixtures. I think you need to win it. And so, yeah, do as much as you can to hold, you know, to keep some players fresh, but only once that game is won, I think is the way to play it. So, yeah, I think he keeps the same 11 with the possible debate over Martinelli.
Well, it's not going to be the same 11.
Except the one obvious one.
Yes. And Mikel's been speaking about that in the press conference. There's loads of questions about Ramsdale, obviously. I just pulled up a couple of quotes that he's given.
Ramsdale Tiscos is back.
He, on playing this weekend, he said he's fully prepared. He's trained really well every day. He's desperate to play like the rest of the boys that haven't had many opportunities. Saturday is going to be a great day for him. Says he's been brilliant in terms of his attitude, been really good, really supportive, pushing every day in training like I expected. And it's a joy to have two goalkeepers in the team, stroke squad. There've been lots of questions on my shows in the last couple of days about Ramsdale and how I think him coming back into the side might impact Arsenal. Lots saying that maybe he should have been given a go against Sheffield United just to get him into the groove ahead of this game, which is always going to be a tough one. I never expected that to happen. Mm-hmm. And to be fair, even if he had been, he would have been tested more in the warm-up than he would have been in the game itself. So it didn't really matter given how that game panned out. But do you have any concerns about Ramsdale coming in and how, you know, whether that will change the way the Arsenal defence, because they've been so good, you know, just not giving up any chances. And, you know, there's just seems to be this sort of intuition between a lot of them at the moment in terms of how it works. But do you have any fear that that might be interrupted a little bit with Ramsdale coming back behind them?
Not greatly. I think the last few times we've seen Ramsdale, I think there maybe has been a sense from the way he's playing that he's one sort of desperately trying to prove that he can do what David Raya does, especially on the ball, holding possession, drawing the press, that he can do that as well as Raya can. And you would suspect it's, obviously, I can't always get into the mindset of a professional footballer, but you would suspect by now that Ramsdale understands, like, this isn't a fight that's, you know, a fight that he can win. The best thing he can do is just come in, play his normal, natural game, trust that, you know, four players who all played with him last season will know what he needs to help him out and just, you know, cope. I mean, also bear in mind, like we were saying, this Arsenal team are sensational defensively. Brentford have gone off the boil a bit. It might be a pretty quiet game for him anyway. So I'm not worried. He's still an England international. He's still a very good goalkeeper. It's just Arsenal have got one at the moment that's better. I think most teams would take Ramsdale in the Premier League. So it'd be fine.
Yeah, I think there's a little bit of a difference in terms of where Arsenal are now. When Ramsdale came in for that game against Brentford earlier on in the season, I think there was still very much a debate of who is Arsenal's number one. Could it be Ramsdale? Could it be Raya? And whether that put more pressure on Ramsdale, I don't know. There was just definitely a lot more spotlight on it going into that game. There won't be this weekend. And also it's at the Emirates, which is going to be a completely different experience for what it was like at Brentford when all the fans were on his back. I've got no real concerns about it like you. I mean, this is still an England international you're talking about who's been very, very good for Arsenal. And I think he'll come in and he'll do well. Interestingly, in the press, Mikel was saying that that he thinks that Ramsdale's proved he can play the way that David Raya does and the way Arteta wants Raya to play. He thinks Ramsdale has shown he can do that. I'm not entirely convinced.
It's only little sort of flourishes that are different, isn't it? I think, you know, Ramsdale is a good kicker and I think the one thing would be the crosses.
I just think Raya's more on the front foot goalkeeper than Aaron Ramsdale is. And I think we've really seen that since the turn of the year in this good run. I think we've really seen what Raya brings to this team and why Mikel was so keen on bringing him here. He's just a real aggressive front foot goalkeeper that that can set the tone for the way Arsenal want to play. And I'm just not sure Aaron, as good as he is, as good as he's been, I'm not sure he's quite got that in him, if you see what I mean.
Agreed.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Right. Ivan Toney, we're going to be seeing him at the Emirates on Saturday. Gave William Saliba one of the toughest games I've ever seen a striker give William Saliba last season in that 1-1 draw. Mikel was asked about him, obviously, in the press conference, given the links to Ivan Toney. He was asked if he could rule out a summer move. James Ollie at ESPN asked him that, and he said, "I don't talk about any other players because if I do, I have to be ruling out every player in the market because we are linked with a lot." On whether Arsenal's sudden influx of goals since the turn of the year has changed his plans for the summer in terms of the transfer plan, he says, "No. The plans that we have for the summer are very clear and they were done almost at the start of the season, understanding what we can have, the contract situation we have with some players and how we want to improve them and maintain the level of the team. So this certainly is not changing anything." First of all, what are you expecting from Ivan Toney this weekend? Do you think he'll be able to give Saliba the type of game he did last season? And I suppose, are you surprised or not surprised about... I mean, that's a rubbish question.
We'll start on the Toney one, but
in terms of Arsenal suddenly scoring all these goals, it was never going to change Arsenal's plans for the summer, was it?
No.
Absolutely not. I think they're always going to sign a striker this summer, whatever happens. And I don't think, suddenly scoring all these goals in the last few weeks was ever going to change that.
No, exactly. I mean, I think Arteta is being a little mischievous in sort of implying that in September 2023, that Edu gets out a stone tablet and chisels on it. These are the positions we're going to sign. These are 1, 2, 3. Like, there is always fluidity to these things. Although the better a team gets, like Arsenal, they knew that they were going all in for Declan Rice, well before even the January window of last year. I mean, Toney, I think he's been really good since he came back. It's only 4 goals in 8, but bear in mind, those 8 games have included 2 against City, 1 against Liverpool. He looks like a player that still has that physicality. The duels, he's actually winning more duels this season, at least on the ground, than he did last season as well. So I don't think he's lost much.
He's also playing alongside Neil Mopay,
which I love. I don't know if I will love it for the 90 minutes that Arsenal are playing against Neil Mopay and Ivan Toney, but it is one classic throwback to 90s big man, little man combos, which we love here. And two, it's 2 players that are really, really capable of riling up the opposition. I think it's underrated that how annoying Toney is now, because Mopay's been such a, whatever you want to call him. I don't know what our policy is on swearing here at Inside Arsenal Extra Time, but I think, that's going to be a real test for Saliba, because increasingly you also see Toney used as a sort of a screen setter, a guy that gets in the way of defenders so that Mopay can use his pace to get in behind. It's going to be a challenge, but we could have said the same thing about Alex Isak, about Nunes and Jota. I think Arsenal will deal with this challenge, and Saliba has got better since we last saw him, since he last saw Toney. I'm really looking forward to seeing this challenge. I know we've spoken about Toney almost since day one of this podcast. I'm more and more convinced that Arsenal shouldn't sign him, but more and more convinced I absolutely love him as a player. I think he's fantastic.
I think he's a really good
challenge.
I like Ivan Toney a lot. They got Vissa back obviously now as well. And Mbeumo's back in training this week. they've been tweeting a lot of pictures and videos of Mbeumo back in training. I can't imagine he goes straight into the starting 11, but it wouldn't surprise me if he's on the, at least on the bench, which makes him a little bit more more threatening.
Mbeumo's really, really good.
Top player. I really like Mbeumo. Every time I see him, I think he's a real handful. Really good player.
If we're talking Brentford players for Arsenal to sign, there's the one.
He's your wild card, is he, for the summer?
He played a lot through the middle this season. Obviously could give you that Saka coverage as well. I don't know. I actually think the team that should sign him is Liverpool if Mo Salah goes. But we are going off track and we do have a lot of things to get through, don't we?
We do. We don't have much time because I've got to go and pick up my kids who are going to be standing at the school gates on their own if I don't get there pretty soon. So we're going to move on to questions now before we wrap this up. Okay, here's one from Charles Ramsey. He says, hey, Charles, here's a question for you and hopefully JB as well. JB.
JB.
Shall I start calling you JB?
It's very posh, isn't it, calling me JB?
Well, you are very posh.
Yeah, we don't like to talk about it.
Right. Here we go. With the interest links from Norwich and Ajax in Cuesta and Stuyvesant, respectively, and Jova's job being taken notice of this season, who would you be most nervous about potentially losing? How likely do you feel it is for one of them to go, and how vital do you feel like they are for the success that we've seen? Also, the evident hope from Barcelona to hire Mikel is hilarious. Thanks for all your hard work. Yeah, I mean, it comes with the territory of being successful, isn't it? I think you're going to get noticed, and you know, it wouldn't surprise me if at least one of the coaching staff go come the summer. We've already seen Ben Napper sort of move away recently, although not on the coaching staff, but a key figure kind of behind the scenes in Arsenal's revival in the last few years. So, yeah, I mean, I wouldn't be overly bothered. I just think they'd appoint someone else. I think Mikel's so smart and has got his finger on the pulse that if someone leaves, he'd be very quick, if he thinks he needs to replace him with someone else equally as effective.
Yeah, I mean, don't forget, this season they lost their most experienced Premier League assistant in Steve Round and not really replaced him. They've effectively given bigger jobs to Cuesta and Molina, and it's made no difference. I mean, the Cuesta to Norwich one is very interesting, and you know, I think there is real interest being driven there, or has been by Ben Napper, who obviously has taken a very senior role at Norwich. So I don't know. I can never follow the Championship well enough to know when that job might become available, but would make sense. I mean, if you're saying which one would you not want to lose, I suppose we really do know that Nicolas Jova has made a profound, and we can see it every game, the impact he's made. But I mean, he's not the only set piece coach in the world. And actually, I think, you know, I think it's really important to have consistency at the very top of your footballing organization. But as we well know, you know, the greatest Premier League managers, Klopp, to an extent Wenger, but maybe should have done more of it. And of course, Ferguson were so good at refreshing their staff to almost refresh. And that's a great way of refreshing the squad without spending £400 million, is getting new eyes on them. So, like you say, I mean, not only would I not worry, I think if it depended on who the staff is, I think it's actually something to be quite excited about if new staff come and settle staff go. And like you say, if you're doing something right, if people want to appoint your first team coach as their manager.
Yeah, I think, yeah, like you, I think if I was going to be concerned about anyone, it'd probably be Jova, just because, as you say, we're seeing what he's doing every single week. But I'm sure there are other set piece coaches out there. I see Chelsea are now suddenly waking up to the set piece coach need and a hunting. I'm sure they'll probably go to Brighton.
Do you have any money to hire one?
I'm sure they'll go to Brighton anyway. And we'll talk about Chelsea's money in a minute. there you go. Moving on. Question for extra time. Why do people talk about pure profit when selling youth players? I see it mentioned as if there is something better in terms of FFP when a youth player sold rather than the player that the club has paid for. Might not have the numbers right, but Chelsea signed Mudryk for 80 million. If they can sell him, or Gallagher for 50 million, it makes no difference who they sell. Their accounts are still 30 million down. Is there something I am missing? I'm handing this over to you because you are going to be far, far better at explaining this than me. And it also allows you to talk about Chelsea's financial results, which I know you want.
Oh, yeah, it's just good fun. We should mention Arsenal's as well.
Go for it. But remember, I am on a clock when we're talking
about...
Yes,
I will go through this quickly. Right. So hopefully, Terry, you are familiar at least with the concept of amortization. The easiest way to explain this is when a football club sign a player, they treat that as acquiring an asset, and that asset has a fixed number of years in which they will have access to it. So perfect example and a great fee, which may not be correct that he's noted. But Chelsea, in accounting terms, even though it's true that they were, you know, but in pure accounting terms, they will say this is an £80 million investment for Mykhailo Mudryk spread across the terms of an 8-year contract. So every year on their books will be a £10 million cost for Mykhailo Mudryk. Conor Gallagher obviously has no cost associated with him. They've spent money on him. But again, accounting terms, he's come through the club. They've spent zero on him. So when they sell him, they will book. When you sell a player, that is all one big cash injection. So if Chelsea sold Mudryk for, what's a reasonable fee for Mudryk? Well, let's say they sold him for 40 million and he's 2 years into his contract. So his book value would be 60 million. So Chelsea would effectively have lost £10 million if they sold Mykhailo Mudryk. This is one of the things that means Chelsea, who just made a loss of, I think it was 90 million off the back of a loss of 120 the previous year. The real challenge they have is these players have huge book values because they put them on contracts that run to a decade. And they're not very good. So you're never going to get your money back. Whereas Gallagher, yeah, that's pure £50 million profit. You've got nothing outstanding that you were running down your account. So yeah, as for Chelsea, their accounts look pretty rough at the moment. Their amortization costs every year are going to be exorbitant, because even if you're spreading £1 billion over an average of 6, 7, 8 years, that is a lot you've committed every single year that will be on your books, that will make it very, very, very hard for you to add players. And as we well know, Charles, the players that are currently on Chelsea's books, not many of them would be the sort that would have wealthy clubs hammering down the door trying to get hold of them. You know, maybe a Cole Palmer or someone, but that's the sort of player Chelsea can't sell. And that's a really key difference between Chelsea, who won't be getting Champions League money next season in their next set of accounts, or the one after, and Arsenal, who did make a loss of, was it 59 million? 52 million. But there is money to be added to those books through Champions League, even if there's also a Declan Rice transfer fee to put on them as well. Mm-hmm. That was quite quick, wasn't it?
That was quite quick. Didn't understand a word of it, but hopefully Terry understood it far better than I did. But I can barely look after my own money, let alone understand multi-billion-pound businesses. Right, Peter and I'm not sure who that one is below. But apologies if I can't get your name right there. But you're both kind of talking about some of the young HLM players. It's the extra time. Love the show, guys. Question for you: if you had to let one player leave in the summer between ESR and Wanyeri, who would it be? And then the question below is: the HLM boys Nelson and Ketia and ESR were all young, new subbed against Sheffield United. Do you think the team has developed beyond them, and should they be on the market this summer? I'll take that at first. The top one's really hard. I mean, I would probably. No, obviously ESR is going to give you far more in terms of first team immediate impact next season. But with my ESR loving hat on, I just want him to go out and play football and enjoy himself and express himself and be a success somewhere. And if that's not going to be at Arsenal, and if he's not going to play, then I just feel the time is right that he may as well move on and continue his career somewhere else where he's got a manager who's going to play him more than Mikel is at the moment. So I would probably say ESR, just because you get more money for him. We don't know yet what Wanyeri could do, but it'd just be, you'd be selling someone for hopefully decent money who is a first team squad member who you're not really using, and you could reinvest that money in a first team squad member who you've got more belief in and are going to play more. So I'd probably go with Smith Rowe there. In terms of the bottom one, has the team moved on? I think it is probably moving on pretty quickly without them. I wasn't too bothered about them not getting minutes at the weekend against Sheffield United, because I could understand what Mikel was doing. You know, Vieira hadn't played for 4 months. Jesus and Partey hadn't played for 4 months. They needed minutes. They desperately needed minutes ahead of some really big games coming up. So I wasn't overly concerned about those lot, especially ESR not coming on for that one like I normally am. I don't know if you agree with all that.
Yeah, I certainly wouldn't blow up the importance of none of them coming on, because, like you say, there were players that really needed the minutes more. But yeah, I mean, you have to consider the homegrown status factor, which obviously all three of those help with. Although you've got the likes of Saka, Saliba, Martinelli, you've got a few that tick that box. I think it really is time to, and let's be frank, like, Arsenal worked really hard to keep those three last summer, and I'm pretty confident that ESR, for instance, would have been ready to go if Arsenal had opened the door, whereas actually they said it's bolted shut. Mm-hmm. And it was a waste. And I think actually there's also, you know, Arsenal have given ESR a lot, but ESR has given Arsenal a lot. And I think there's something about, if you want to be a club that acts the right way, just saying, we could use you as our 20th man in the squad, but you, Emile Smith Rowe, you, Reece Nelson, Eddie Nketiah, could do much better in your career if we let you go. And then we can reinvest that money, even if it means we have a slightly smaller squad. Yeah, I think the time's come. I think it's the right thing to do. I mean, you know, it was funny watching Joe Willock come back a few weeks ago. I think kind of, I know there are people at Arsenal that take actually enormous pride in the fact that he's done so well and kept his place at Newcastle, even when they've become the richest club on the planet. And I think it's always a curious sort of success story, and it's not a Saka success story, but I think Arsenal could be really delighted and proud if those guys go, get them good money, have good careers elsewhere.
Well said. Can't disagree with any of that. I'm going to wrap up today's show with this one from Charlie J. He says, not necessarily Arsenal specific question, but it's interested in your thoughts. I've got tickets to watch Inter Miami when I'm in Orlando in May. Ridiculously expensive, but well worth it to see Messi in person. Is there any past player that you wish you had the chance to see in person but weren't able to, or any current player that you haven't seen yet in person but want to?
Oh, I mean, the past player bit is very, very easy for me. And I was like, I think Charles will say the same player, unless you've seen him. Ronaldo, original Ronaldo, Ronaldo Max, R9. Just certainly the age I grew up in, Football Italia was sort of Sunday afternoon appointment viewing. And this guy was something, I mean, he there was something angelic about him, wasn't it? He just didn't look human or feel human. I think before Haaland, he was the real like freak of nature. I don't know, current players, I actually don't feel like there are that many that I really wanted to see but haven't got to. And I now get more excited about sort of, do you know who I was really excited to see? Lewis Miley. And I really enjoyed watching Lewis Miley the first few times I saw him. I mean, like, what a ludicrous privilege of this job it is that you get to see so many top players. I mean, yeah. Luka Modric, I have to also say, reluctantly, was a player I adored watching when I got to see him. And really had wanted to since the minute he left Tottenham. But yeah, Ronaldo was the... Ronaldo's always the one I wish I could have seen at his prime.
Yeah, I didn't see him at his prime, but I was, my favourite ever game that I've ever been to in my life was the 0-0 draw with Real Madrid at Highbury in 2006. Mm. And he played in that game. And I just love that match so much. It was just really special to just see Arsenal win, obviously, but just to see them beat Real Madrid under the lights at Highbury and the atmosphere there. Anyone who was lucky enough to be there that night at Highbury, it was just a spectacular night, even if there were no goals. It could have been about 4-4 as well. It wasn't 4-0, it was an incredible 0-0. I would say player who I haven't seen, who I would love to have been able to see, probably Liam Brady, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking to all my Arsenal friends of that era, he was such a good player. Current player, I would say Mbappe, because I haven't seen him yet. And I think that's where I'm going to have to wrap it up, because I'm looking at the clock and it is definitely time for me to go now. So I'm going to have to call time on it. But thank you very much for joining me. Appreciate it as always, mate. And yeah, you there on Saturday?
My pleasure. Yeah, I'll possibly see you from afar on Saturday.
I'm in the press box on Saturday. Hey. So I shall see you there.
See you then.
All right, mate. Nice. Thank you for watching, everyone. We'll be back tomorrow with the usual show. So keep tuned for that. And yeah, enjoy the rest of your Thursday. Have a good one. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned, We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud. Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win. And support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.